Welcome to the Love Cars on the Grid podcast, your global motorsport roundup with me, Tiffany Dell, and Paul Woodman.
Welcome to Love Cars on the Grid, your global motorsport podcast roundup. It was another Max Verstappen masterclass in Japan. There were just four races in Red Bull rivals. I think they're kind of understanding that they're out of the show already, but four races gone. More strife for Williams. Team's principal, James Vowles, he's been talking about protecting drivers and crashes and chassis and all sorts. So we'll come on to that.
Ron Speak. He's brought Ron Speak back. When I read the quote out, you'll all understand. Ron Speak is back in Formula One with Mr. Vowles.
Red Bull, still some behind-the-scenes saga going on. I think that's going to go on forever. No sooner has Liberty Media bought MotoGP, but there's talked about a combined event, but I'm not sure where that would work. Imagine that, F1 and MotoGP, will come on to that. Back on the track, we got World GT Series at Paul Ricard, that huge, colourful circuit. And it was a 40th anniversary, what was that, Hendrick Motorsport. Martinsville? That was
A rout in Martinsville, an amazing celebration that went
so well. Let's go to Japan. I don't want to sort of jump straight in there, but arguably it was actually quite a good race because there's lots of overtaking. Yeah. And that was down to multiple stops, tyre troubles and all sorts.
Nobody knew what was going on, but it was lots of overtaking. Cars got in and out of the pits. But then most of the talk was really already, as we said, you know, well, look, they won that one. And almost all the chatter now is about who's going where next year. You know, we had a jokingly talked about it last week, didn't we, about who's going to where to what. But I mean, there are only seven drivers that are like contracted for next year. This season, no driver's changed anything. And yet it is going to be a huge build up because also it's creating great pressure on said unemployed drivers. So that is the intriguing part of 2024, is not who's going to win the world championship, but you know, who's going to impress. Because only Leclerc and Hamilton are Ferrari contracted. Only Max is contracted to Red Bull, but he could leave. Mark, he's already threatened. So Mark, you know, these contracts don't mean that much half the time. The most stable team has to be Lando and Oscar in McLaren. Great pairing that. George, of course, will be at Mercedes. Who'll be with him? Nobody knows. Albon is contracted to Williams, but they keep on saying his contract could be easily broken. So then there's all these people queuing up, and it all probably, you know, what are Red Bull going to do with Checo now? Because Perez now has a good Grand Prix. So Perez has suddenly woken up to the fact he can't stroll around 20, 30 seconds behind. He's got to be closer to Max if he's going to prove himself. Carlos is looking like the best Ferrari driver all of a sudden. I don't know where he would like to go. I suppose, I don't know, are they all eyeing Perez's seat? But Perez looks like holding his seat. You've got Ricciardo, who was so desperate to stay in Formula One that, you know, he sat in a garage for it. He could have been winning Le Mans. He could have been Indy. It's such a shame. The driver seemed so obsessed with staying in this little, you know, 10-team clique. And now, you know, he's having a miserable time in Japan. Yuki's blowing him away. He got closer, didn't he, in qualifying when he didn't make Q3. And so there's the radio, oh, don't worry, you know, Daniel, you're much closer to Yuki by only about a few. Oh, yeah, I'm still pissed off. I'm, you know, miserable. He's got Liam Lawson, you know, one of the outside kids sitting in the garage, you know, looking over his shoulder at the screens. Oh, dear. So, you know,
it is a bit of turmoil, but I'm looking forward to it. I wonder if anything will happen this year before the end of the season. I guess not. But the team that you said that was rock solid. Yeah, but you said McLaren were rock solid. But yeah. I thought that about Ferrari. I thought that was rock solid as well. So you never know what's around the corner.
Fernando's sitting there, you know, whoa, obviously wants to be pick of the team, thinks that they'll all be after him, which they quite should be. He did an amazing race again, you know, in Japan.
Yeah.
Stroll has to, his dad has to drop him, surely. You've got Gasly and Ocon.
I stick up for Stroll a lot, actually, and say that, you know, good on him. He should be there. And he's a very good wet weather driver, but he's really not performing, is he, at the moment?
The Gasly and Ocon Alpine. I mean, Alpine having a terrible time. But although the team's having a terrible time, the battle between those two to be picked to go elsewhere. And Ocon is probably at the moment ahead of Gasly.
He is,
You've got the Sargeant and Albon. The Sargeant probably has to go, sadly. I always think drivers should get two seasons. we don't really know. We'll talk about him later, about the Williams scenario. You've got Bottas and Zhou out of contract. And, of course, that team's going to Audi. So I think Audi getting paid. Audi almost want to know what's going to happen with Mercedes and Ferrari and Red Bull, because who they get will depend on who stays where they are. Bottas, he's always promoting himself very well, isn't he? There was more stories recently. I'm beginning opening my negotiations, because obviously Audi are very keen to have, you know, sort of, he types himself up as Audi's first choice, but I honestly don't think he is. And then, of course, we've got another great battle is with the Haases. You know, I can't believe they're going to keep both of them. So I think the battle between those two. So there are so many great races going on just between the pairs of drivers. And I think Hülkenberg's moment sort of got the one over K-Mag. So all fascinating.
The Bottas story, though, maybe he is the first choice for Audi, because Audi, they're not going to track the best. The Tiff, who are they going to track? They're going to be a bottom team. They're going to be one of the bottom runners to start off with, at least.
Yeah, a five-year contract at £400 million a year. They can get who they want, probably. Liv. Actually, talking about golf now, Jonathan Rahm, who got £400 million to go to Liv, now wants to go back to 72 holes because he doesn't like the stupid Liv format. But they have to change the format, because it couldn't be Liv. It'd have to be LXXII. Is that 72? Sorry, I digress. So, just a little bit of chat about Williams. Williams and the other team, I think, will be the Drive to Survive stars of the next film over the next winter.
Of crashes, yes.
Oh, dear. And they've got this new team principal, James Vowles, who's got the most frowny face, even when he's smiling. He's the most serious-looking man on the pit wall. And he came out with this Ron speak. Ron speak, of course, was famous as Ron Dennis. He used to turn the most simple things, the most complex, long answers. And after poor old Sergeant and his went wide, fell off in qualifying, this is how he described it. I think, I'm sure Sergeant must be paying money, because they're protecting him like mad. I mean, we don't know the details, but, you know, one has to assume
it's got to be something to do with Liberty Media or the US parent company. Or
exactly,
something.
Being American, have to be an American. Anyway, he described Sergeant's off as, there was far more turning potential in it. He just didn't know where the car was on the track. But he didn't make a mistake. So it's complete.
Unbelievable.
I mean complete Sergeant Logan. Logan said, yeah, I run wide, made a mistake. But, you know, Vowles was so keen to protect his American driver. But of course, in the race, another crash, writing another car off, and poor old, you know. And again, Albon was put almost identical to when was it K-Mag put him in the wall at Brazil last year? We mentioned this last week. Again, poor old Albon was there on his own, just on the right-hand side, and Ricciardo unnecessarily.
Do you know what? You think about Albon over the years, he's been very, very unlucky. That Hamilton took him out for his win. He lost his Red Bull drive, which he probably shouldn't have lost. And if he didn't lose that then, if he had a few more races, what a difference in his career, what might have happened.
So nearly won two Grand Prix. And Lewis punted him off in two Grand Prix, Brazil and Austria, where he was virtually on the edge of winning. So Williams, I think, are going to be the stars of Drive to Survive next winter. I mean, they're sending another chassis back, coming back home. The complexity of those chassis, you know, the work they have to do and to strip them down in Japan, put a mechanic, send it in a postage back to London, not London, Oxfordshire. And then back to China in 10 days' time. So poor old Williams having a terrible time.
But you drove a Williams V10 once, didn't you?
Yeah, the Williams BMW round Rockingham, chasing Vicky. I had to do three laps in my Formula One car before she could do four laps in the BMW M5. That was tremendous.
Two laps for her, three for you.
Was it two? Yeah, I had to do three, yes.
She didn't do more than you, put it that way. But if she did, you're not a very good driver.
Frank Williams organised that, and Frank thanked us for making shows how quick a Grand Prix car is against a really high performance road car. Wonderful. I mean, they're a wonderful team, Williams. Everybody loves them. Everyone wants them to do well, you know, and it's such a shame when they're struggling so much. But just going back to the weekend, there was lots of stuff over the weekend. We had this new FP1, we had Ayumi Iwasa take over for Ricciardo's car. It didn't help Ricciardo's cause, because he lost FP1. FP2 was rained off. So he only got his car back really for FP3, and he qualified close to his little Japanese mate, but didn't out qualify him. But yeah, Iwasa's one of his drivers. I don't know, he's had 2 years in Formula Two, he's finished fifth and fourth in the F2 championship. He has some amazing races. He's won a couple of, I don't know, three feature races in F2 and a couple of sprint reverse grids. And sometimes he's the boy on fire, and other times he's not that good. So anyway, they gave him FP1, 22-year-old Japanese boy, two Japanese drivers for the home thing. But he was 16th in FP1, 0.9 down on Yuki. So good job, but whether he'll ever get a drive, who knows? Another Red Bull protege. So then we had FP2, it was wet. So Ricardo didn't get much time in his car. But I was really talking about on Twitter, and I've got all the results of qualifying, how close they are. I mean, I just always explain it. The car's got to be more important than the driver, because there's just tenths. You know, Suzuka, this most challenging circuit. I'd have a bad day at a Group C race, and I'd be 2 seconds a lap in qualifying slower than my teammates. I woke up and found another second and a half. But they've just soaked all those corners of various... And the fact they're all different cars as well, the fact, you know, you've got Mercedes and you've got Ferraris and you've got Red Bull, and they're so close. You know, Max in the end, so Max on pole, 0.066 quicker than Perez, you know, 6.5 hundredths of a second. Lando was third, you know, 0.3. So even Lando was third. He was only 0.27 faster than his teammate, Oscar, who lined up eighth on the grid. So from third to eighth. It's just, I just don't know how it all. It's so.
But you
close.
Say that, but I haven't been involved in much racing, but even Caterham Racing, the top 5, 6, 7 will be within a couple of tenths or a few tenths. There's nothing in it.
So, a few tenths. You've just gone up a few tenths. Yeah, I'm going to check all your race results. I'm going to see what was your average distance from pole position to you, average time distance.
And it's certainly not unusual in a Caterham race for three or four cars to have a photo finish. That's
once you're racing,
common.
Though, you're in the slipstream. I mean, once you're in the race,
exactly.
So you can be half a second slower, but you can stay with the leader in the pack. But, you know, Sainz was 0.104 quicker than Leclerc. So that's a tenth quicker. And Leclerc only had one set of tyres in FP3. So he could only have one go at qualifying. But he still got within a tenth of Sainz. You know. There was a certain Fernando Alonso who's a 0.770, nearly half.
That's embarrassing. That's embarrassing, especially when you look at what you're doing now, comparing how close all the other teammates are.
And he didn't. You know, I'm doing the comparison times in the Q1, Q2, Q3, whenever they went out. So that was in Q1. Alonso was that much quicker than Lance, who didn't qualify. And Lewis was 0.2 ahead of 0.24 ahead of George. But it still stuns me, all those corners. You think, just can't you drive? But it must be so, you know, with the cars, you just brake at 52 yards and turn in and then accelerate again. And it still amazes me. It just amazes me.
Yeah. Nice circuit, nice people, lovely country.
Yeah. The fans in Japan. I mean, there's no better motorsport fans, the Japanese fans, but they all put on fancy dress, half of them, all dressed up in team colours.
Come on, the Italians, the British,
that's a different sort. Different fans. They don't. When the cars went round of the parade, the little flags all waving until Yuki went by.
Yeah, but look at Italy. When I was just in Imola, actually, I did a lap of Imola yesterday, which is 30 years ago when Senna died. By the way, that's incredible, isn't it? But not in a Formula One car, but. But the Italian fans, Imola, Monza, where they got all the Ferrari flags out, the Italian fans, they got me right up there.
The Tifosi, it's a different sort of fan. These Japanese, they're all in kit.
They're all happy as well, aren't they?
But qualifying was exciting. But, you know, Lando, really good weekend. Lando, you know, put Piastri in his place for another weekend. So Lando's on a charge, but so close, but... When it comes to the race, you know, they all spread out into their own little two by twos. But then we come to the race morning, and it was a shadow because we got Crofty, we got Bernie, the strategist. So she seemed to come prominent. They were a bit short of their stars for this weekend because Anthony Davidson, fantastic. He's a really good expert. He took over from Martin. So Bernie was doing a lot of stuff because they hadn't done enough testing in Q2, FP2, because it was wet. So nobody knew what tires to go on. But Bernie and Crofty just talked about it for about, it felt like an hour in the 1 minute build up or 2 minutes build up to the race, just going on and on about, well, this tire would do that and that tire, and if that tire can do, and then the overcut and the undercut. I just felt they put such a low tone on the race. It was almost like, we know it's going to be boring, so we'll make tell you why it's going to be boring before it even started. And this, you know, this tire difference, I know it's what they've done to make overtaking happen, which worked, but you still didn't know. Once it all started pitting, you lost the real feel for the race.
Look, I'm sorry, I'm going to be contentious. I don't get what she adds, really. She's supposed to be this strategist, this expert.
Well, she was. She was head strategist. Yeah,
but, okay, so why is she not now? Why is she still not there now? Why isn't she that. Within? Why is she not gone in?
I've asked myself that. She's married and lives wherever she lives. And she thought the 24 races were getting too much for her. I think she must have had a chat in the pub with someone that said, well, Sky might offer you a job. And so she's only doing 10 of the 24 this year. So that's why she decided, it's too much. I mean, she did been doing strategy. Yeah. She was head of strategy.
Yeah, I know. She's clearly a very intelligent,
but
far more.
All she brings to it is what we don't want to know about. It's almost like, I don't want to know that. I don't want to know. I mean, can we say in about one sentence? Of course, it'll depend which tires they use and how the strategy works out. End. I don't want to get into detail about how many laps the soft should do and how many laps the mid. And maybe there are geeks, not geeks, I can't insult our viewers. Maybe there are people that love all this tech, but it's just, it just almost wore me out. Well, yeah, too much. Too much talk about strategy and tires.
What gets me, all these experts online, what gets me, and I know you've got to talk, and I know it's really hard to talk about something when it's live and you're not quite sure what's going to happen, but he's going to catch him up, and it's going to be the most exciting finish ever. And he's 10 seconds in front. Or, yes, they've got this tire window and they've got to come in now in the next one lap, otherwise they're going to lose this. And then they don't go in for another 10 minutes or whatever. It's just, I know it's a bit of hype. Let's change the subject because I'll get myself...
But the one thing you did learn from Bernie is the fact that it's all really done on the hoof. Because often they do, we switch to plan A, plan B. So in fact, each team has got every scenario, how bad your start is and where you end up. So the strategy is something that does change during the race, which is Bernie's job when she was Aston Martin, the other strategists. So really, before the race starts, you haven't really got a fixed strategy. You can't have. You have to adapt as it goes on. So maybe later on in the race, bring her on and tell more about what they've done.
Do you know what they
changed.
Actually do, which is just, it's astonishing what they do these days. So they will start the race. They'll know the conditions. They'll know the tires. They'll know that everyone else, their times with what they've been doing. So each team will start the race just before the actual race on a simulator
in their
headquarters. So they're running the race just ahead of the race so they can predict what's happening with the tires, with everybody else, with the weather. But isn't that astonishing? Isn't that just as completely mind-blowing? Yeah, it's a bit different to back in the day with you. Go, yeah, I think I've got a few more laps in this cup now. Be all right.
So, start of the race, of course, we had the unfortunate Ricciardo Albon crash, which wasn't really anyone's fault. But Ricciardo did move over.
Ricciardo moved over a bit too much.
Yeah, he didn't have to move over. They thought Stroll was coming, but it wasn't necessary. But it was a shame. But then we had this whole race then, this huge... We had, of course, the Mercedes decided to go for a one-stopper because they got rid of their medium tyres in one lap after the crash. So they decided to go out on the hards to see if they could do a one-stopper, which didn't work. I didn't realise Lewis had apparently touched Leclerc during the sort of first lap and done some damage without saying what it was, which is why he was slower than George, let George by.
Yeah, but he's slower than George every race at the moment. So Lewis having a miserable season.
So the one-stop strategy didn't work, that was for sure. You then had this bewildering number of tyre changes going on and people going up and down the leaderboard. You thought, have they stopped it? No, he hasn't stopped it. Who stopped? We had Leclerc out front. Leclerc was going for a he did make the one-stop strategy, I think. So he started on the mediums and managed to go through just for the hards at the end. So that seemed to us. So that was going on. Strategy. I love Stroll. Stroll was on the phone to his pit saying, oh, I'm so slow. Oh, we're so faster in the track, man. We're slow in the straights, man. Like, man. Of course, it took Mike Crack to explain after, well, yes, Lance, because if you've got worn tyres and you're in a bunch who have new tyres, they've got better speed onto the straight. Therefore, Lance, they look faster in the straight. But he didn't seem to work that out for himself. He just thought they were all going.
All about your exit speed. More so than your entry,
It was quite interesting. I watched someone overtake poor old Gasly, because Gasly's complained all weekend his car loses rear end. And apparently Suzuka's what they call a rear end track. It more relies on how your rear grips. And coming out of that long curve to go down the hill past the pits, you could just see him squirming, you know, and whoever was overtaking just drove up behind him and went past him. Not due to DRS even, just the fact that poor old Gasly couldn't get the speed onto the straight. But at the end of the day, you know, after all this goings on, we had the Red Bull 1-2, the Ferrari 3-4, Lando good fifth to Piastri's eighth. Then little George chasing Alonso again, but this time Alonso didn't do anything wrong and didn't get disqualified. Alonso held on to his sixth, George seventh. Lewis a miserable ninth, wasn't he? Was down there. Yuki, that star, I suppose, the only thing that made
brilliant.
It a really good weekend. But little Yuki, who wants that Red Bull job. I think he might get destroyed if he gets it, but who hoes? But again, the flags went. I think Yuki getting 1 point was what excited the Japanese crowd quite rightly, more than anything else.
Charles made a mistake. Sorry, go on. You do your summary.
Haas 11th and 12th was strolling between them, and a miserable weekend yet again for Saubers and Alpines.
And of course, Williams. Charles made another mistake. He seems to make those mistakes once in a while, doesn't he? Just ran wide a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
The grass.
Degner 2, horrible call to Degner 2, which will caught Logan Sargeant. Sargeant poor old ended up reverse. I haven't seen Mike Crack's Ron speak about how poor old Sargeant had to reverse back on the track. Degner was wonderful corner, because you know it's like two corners. That was to create some runoff space. So in fact, Degner, when you were in long left-hander Dunlop, it was a longer straight down the hill into one tight right-hander, that then had a longer straight up towards the hairpin, that right-hand quink. So it was a much better corner, but now it needed runoff, so they chopped it. It was a horrible-looking thing. So you go quick through the first one, don't you? And then you've got to break again to get into the second one, which does catch a lot of people out.
Yeah. I think the highlight for me was the pit lane chaos when about five cars came in at once and they were all releasing them onto each other. And then little Yuki just cruised down the front. Thank you so much, guys.
Thank you, team. Well, it's probably Logan Sargeant been doing a good job, and his team let him down at the pit stop when he came out last of five, I think. It was about five cars in the pits at once.
And then, but did you see they were all letting them out sort of into each other? And
it was terrifying, to be honest. The way they allow their teams to stand out there, you know, it's really scary. It's always one man on the outside of the back, you know, just watching cars come.
50 miles an hour pit lane limit, I guess.
Yeah, but still, but the boys all light up the rear tires, don't they?
Yeah,
that's fast. And they do 50 in about half a second, lighting up the rear tires. And they all slide out as well, you know, so you only get someone sliding out a bit too much.
Bottas did that once, didn't he?
Yeah.
Do you remember that?
So it was entertaining. Lots of overtake. Yuki did some wonderful round the outsides at the top of the S's. Okay, his tyres were much better. That's why he was able to do it. But he still did some ballsy outings. And then Perez just drove past the two Mercedes, wasn't it, down the straight. He just came out with better traction out of Spoon 2 and just drove past them out to 130. Crofty went mental because it was like, overtake into 130R. 130 is now straight. 130 is flat out.
Used to go corners with the names or with the numbers?
Oh, names. Of course, names. Until they invented 23 corners. Which shows how stupid it is. You can't have 23 names. That should be a limitation. Right. You can only have as many corners as you can come up with a different good name for.
Well, I'll tell you this. There should be a corner at Truxton named after you. And because you've done more laps on that track than anyone else. And you're a bit of an icon in this field. So I'm going to have a chat with Pat. Pat, if you're watching, which you won't be, please. Tiff's
turn? That's a bit naff, though, isn't it? I'm sure they've got all the land speed record holders in sequence, because there's Allard and then there's Campbell, Cobb, Seagrave, Noble. So I'd have to kick out a world land speed record holder, which is a bit embarrassing.
What if we put in a little chicane?
I don't want any chicane named after me. That's final. If anyone puts a chicane at Straxton, I will not have my name on it.
If you can have any corner, if you can have any corner in the world named after you, because it might happen, you know, you might pop your plugs and we might all feel sorry for you and say, okay, let's do a GoFundMe and name a corner after Tiff. Which corner in the whole world would you name after you?
The brand set, either church, one of the really fast ones, but most of the corners I liked when I was younger, they're not there anymore. They've been chicanes have killed them. Silverstone, Woodcut Corner at Silverstone. We used to come in at 130 and just about get flat out through the old Woodcut Corner. Westfield Hawthorne at Brandsacks, those fast, challenging corners. So I don't know which one I'd pick. Church all at Thruxton.
Right. Very good.
So an entertaining Grand Prix in a weird way, but not really when you analyse who won what and who came where.
Let's move on, because we've spent a lot of time on the Grand Prix, so I don't never know how to judge it with our listeners and viewers. So feedback would be good, please, below.
That's why I thought I'd go through the facts a bit of that Grand Prix, because there wasn't much else on this week. We only had two other motorsports internationally, starting with the Fanatec GT World Challenge down at Paul Ricard. 54 GT3 cars. It was amazing. It's so successful, that. Around that horrible stuff. With great commentary, David Addison and John Watson, of course. Watty on the analyst stuff. Great pairing they are as a commentator. Talk through a three-hour race. Lots of good insight without going over the top or screaming and shouting. At the end of the 3 hours, a great result for the British driver. Dan Harper led the three-driver team, the BMW winning team. And in fact, it was incredibly close racing. And you see this, like, in the top 10 finishes, there were eight different manufacturers. I mean, the way they've got that balance of power working is absolutely fantastic. Because Harper was chasing down Caldarelli in the second hour in the Lamborghini that led most of the way. And he was just working on him before he eventually managed to get inside him and make the pass that gave him the win at the end of the race. Because Caldarelli held on to second in the Lamborghini, but Mercedes third. Another BMW 4th with Valentino Rossi in it, which is always making GT racing more interesting. The best Porsche was 5th, the best Audi 6th, the best Aston Martin 7th, the best Ferrari 9th, and then the best Ford Mustang, a new car on the block, was 10th. So, I mean, just, you know, three drivers in each car, so that's 162 drivers. Great stuff. I mean, it's just a great spectacle. Maybe not a spectacle around that awful track, but there we go. And then NASCAR.
Before we go to NASCAR, let's have a chat about this Liberty Media thing, the MotoGP combining with...
We mentioned that in the news, didn't we? No, we forgot about the news. Yeah. Just the news that Liberty have bought MotoGP. And almost immediately, I don't think the Liberty have started these stories, but someone's already started, probably they'll have a weekend with both formats. And it's just ludicrous. I mean, I don't know who started the rumour or got it going, whether Liberty mentioned it. Because most racetracks now, the Grand Prix are sellouts. And especially so you're going to add another sort of, and even the motorbikes and some of their tracks are sellouts. So hold on a minute, you're already selling out. You can't suddenly, who's not going to get tickets? So
they're doing themselves out of money as well.
Well, the trick is they'll double the price of the flipping tickets. So it's going to be a bad...
You can't double the bloody price. They're already ridiculous prices at most tracks. For Grand Prix.
It's a stupid idea, basically. I think it's just something someone said.
I'm sure they'll do one.
Someone that doesn't have huge walk-in spectators. Yeah. You know, someone like Qatar, it's a great motorbike track and an interesting Grand Prix.
That could work. See, that could work there. That could work. Qatar combining it there, and Qatar will be all over it because good for...
You've got to have two TV crews. There'll be different contracts. So there's all the two TV setups. Who's running what when? I bet the bikes wouldn't like going on with the rubber laid down by Formula One cars because that would make their bikes go horrible. No, it's a no-go, all right? No.
Mm. There's some mileage in that with Qatar. That's not a bad one.
Finally, the NASCAR. It's always NASCAR. We had another pretty average race, to be fair, I'm afraid to say. It was interesting, but average. Because the real tight is the half-mile Martinsville, the paperclip, as they call it, because one end's tighter than the other end. So one end oval's tighter than the other. But it was an amazing weekend because it was the 40th anniversary of the giant Hendrick Motorsport team, the sort of semi-factory Chevrolet, the other factory Chevrolet team, which, of course, Carl Larson drives for. So it's their 40th anniversary, their first ever win. And they brought 1,500 of their employees all to have a big grandstand for Hendrick Motorsport. And somehow, out of the blue, they managed to finish first, second, and third.
Wow.
So it was amazing.
Bloody amazing. Wow. But, I love stories like that. I really do.
It was Kyle Larson, the quickest driver, obviously, in NASCAR, that got pole and led the first segment. But he got done. It was such a tight overtake. Overtake was so hard. And if you're on the outside on the restarts, it was you wanted to try and get back in because the left lane, the inside lane, was going quicker and quicker and quicker. So if you got in the outside lane, you would drop two or three places almost guaranteed. And Larson had one bad pit stop, which put him, I think, third instead of first. So he got stuck on the outside, and you just couldn't overtake. An overtake there was overtaking, but it would take about 20 laps. And they just go around side by side. And the guy on the outside sort of goes ahead because he's got better drive out of the corner because you've got the longer line. And then the inside guy dives back up right alongside under the braking. And then the guy on the outside gets half a car length ahead, getting the power down on the inside. So it could take 20 laps to make an overtake. And they're just inches apart, go round and round and round. So it's spectacular, but not much more overtaking than a Formula One race. But and the pit stops are so important. If you lose three spots on a track like that, it's a disaster. Then the restarts depends where you're on the track position. Kyle Larson dominated the first sector and then dropped back to eventually finish second. He got to second on the last lap. But it was William Byron, actually. I say you couldn't overtake, but Byron in the other Chevrolet teammate, Mark Hendrick, won. He came from 18th on the grid to win. So overtaking is still possible, but it just you don't see it that much sometimes. You know, someone just suddenly is moving up the pack,
yeah.
But the camera might not always be on how they managed to get past. But then Chase Elliott started third and finished third to make the Hendrick Motorsport 1-2-3. Wonderful stuff. God, they were all happy. But I wasn't happy with Larson, and he got second. And of course, there'll be more NASCAR every weekend, whoever you want to follow, wherever you go. They'll be nasty.
Well, one more roundup. I've just got hot off the press from Adam Bedridge at Caterham, our mate. It was the Caterham Academy kicking off this year. At
The sprint.
What's it called?
I've forgotten.
No.
No.
Kerbera. Yeah. And their media driver this year is the lovely Sam Parker. So you might know Parker Motorsport. You know Parker Motorsport. But yes. It's Porsche. Mostly,
they race GT3s and stuff. Yeah.
So she's been involved with Caterham for about 20 years. She does the commentary in the pit lanes and the interviews and stuff. But she's actually driving. She's a good driver herself. And it's so TSL timing is amazing. And there's the one that it's on at the moment. I think it's just for this sprint race. It's great that they're doing it, but it's very complicated. She came, I think, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9th overall. But of course, it's in two groups, so I don't know whether she made the podium. I think she might have made the podium, but I was away. Ooh. Sam, I'm sorry, I was away. I didn't. I'm trying to get the results, but I can't. So watch Sam Parker this year for the Caterham Academy. We're going to be there. We're not for the academy. We're going to be there in Silverstone on the 16th of June. When's that, Tiff? June? Yeah, 16th June. Of June.
That's what you told me.
Yeah, it is 16th of June. So we're going to be there then. But. Good on you, Sam. Looking forward to watching you there. What's coming up next week, Tiff? Well, the main Caterham stuff starts this week, so that's Sneston.
Another quiet weekend again. All we got really in single seaters is Formula E. We're heading to Misano for the first time down in Italy to see how they get on. It's more of a racetrack, so I should imagine there'll be a lot more not wanting to lead because you don't want to drag everyone else around. But I'm interested to watch at Misano. But MotoGP, probably the star rating of the weekend. They're at America at COTA. Always amazing stuff.
Nice.
Around that big. What's it like on the track.
I was going to say, yeah.
They get a bit spread out. They get a bit spread out. But the speed down that main straight. Then back in Britain, we've got round two of the Pro Bike British Rally Championship. Head to the Seven Valley Stages. So get your wellies on. Head to Wales if you want to watch the Rally Boys in action. But of course, the place to be is the one and only Goodwood. Members meeting this weekend.
Of course.
It was wonderful. I will be there racing. Well, I hope I'm racing. As long as my driver, my owner gives me the Mustang. I did one day's test and my arms fell off. Quite heavy steering. I'm not fit, that's for sure. But yeah, good. But it'll be a wonderful weekend. Mustang. I'll qualify on the Saturday. Races about midday on the Sunday. So, and all
what's
sorts
the forecast?
Going on. I haven't looked at the weather. I don't know.
Okay.
But, well, I think they're celebrating Can-Am cars. No, I've given up the exercise. I might do some on Wednesday, just warm myself.
He's very good, viewers, listeners, friends. So he'll get a weight and just do that.
I've got the dumbbells.
Watching the football.
Can you see the dumbbells? Is that the dumbbells? They're on the table there, but you know, they tend to stay on the table.
He's very, very good. When I'm 89 like you, I hope I'm as fit as you.
See you all
Thanks for joining.
See you at Goodwood.
See you next week.
Cheers.
Cheers.